Like I snuck in there, this is take two for this episode. Because the last one just was bad.
It was very, very bad. We decided to try
recording
as we watched the episode, and that didn't work out so well.
Yeah, we got even more off topic than we do normally. I go figure. But
if you want to go with the first comment from Shane.
Well, all right. Let's see. It says, "Hey guys, just listening to episode one. In regards to actors who reprise their characters on the show, Alexis Cruz did play Scar in both, but Mili Avital, I'm probably pronouncing that wrong, did not return to play Sharae. This was played by Vater Bendera in the TV show. However, Eric Avery did return to play Kasuf, Sharae's father."
That's
probably just butchered all the names.
We got different information from Laura following episode zero, didn't we? So
at
we seem to have a conflict. Laura, if you're listening to this, would you care to respond to Shane? See if we can get a fight.
And you need to send us some voicemails, people. Or at least record it and email it to us. That way it's a little easier. That way I don't butcher the names myself.
That's true. This is Shane again, and he says, "Still listening to the Ghost Show. Just curious how you guys are going to cover the big finished Stargate audio dramas. Apparently they're going to feature members of the cast from the TV show. I've only had a preview of one of the Atlantis shows, but it sounded pretty good. I was actually reading about these in my Open University Stargate group recently, and I think there's four. And the first one was actually read, the four commissioned, the first one was actually read, it's set between series 3 and 4. First one is actually read by Michael Shanks, who plays Daniel Jackson. And he does actually impersonate the other members of the team.
Does
when he's reading it, and it's told through Daniel's eyes. Somewhere between series 2 and series 3.
Does he have a link to it? Because that sounds interesting. I had not heard anything about that.
Well, I have actually heard something about it. I was going to mention that. I'd forgotten the chain that actually mentioned it in his email. If the show was, what I'll say to you, Shane, is we're going to investigate further, and if it's set between season 2 and 3, and as I understand, the first one certainly is told through Daniel's eyes, then we'll review it when we're at that point.
Which is probably still a couple of years from now.
Yeah.
About a decade.
So yes, we will cover them eventually. So the show is set between series 2 and 3, so we review it sort of around the end of series 2. I mean, I'll pick it up and listen to it.
Which will probably be in about 10 years.
We do intend to release fortnightly.
Anyway.
I still hold to that. Look, next year I'm probably going to weekly anyway. Because I won't be studying.
That'll be nice.
Well, up to September anyway, then I'll be locked away in a master's degree. You want to go with the last one from Shane?
Yeah. It says, "One final time. At the end of Children of the Gods, so you said that Horus Guards from the movie didn't appear during the TV series. In fact, they did turn up a few times. I read somewhere that the reason they used Serpent Guards from the TV show was because it was much simpler and therefore cheaper design, but still retained an Egyptian feel. The Horus Guard helmets were done in CG in the movie. Whenever they had to be worn or removed, that there was no doubt to be an added expense the show didn't need. They did show it once in Mobius when Teal'c removed a Horus Guard helmet. Either the Horus Guards would need a major redesign. Anyway, the Horus Guards didn't appear often, but they did turn up a few times over the years." Actually, I would agree with that. On Friday, I think, might have been Thursday. Anyway, Sci-Fi Channel had a marathon of SG-1, and I actually do recall seeing a Horus Guard that Teal'c had. Maybe that was Mobius then, too. Because I wasn't really paying that much attention to it. I kind of put it on as background noise.
Stargate is not background noise. Don't you sort of slide off our podcast with
it?
We barely started.
I was actually looking at job sites, you know, so I can find a job. So I wasn't really paying attention to it.
Oh, by the way, I appreciate the link about Sky One airing Continuum. A, I knew it. B, I don't have Sky One.
Well, I was gonna quote that, or I was gonna read that news, so you know, people that do have it can, you know,
even the few sort of listeners we have with Satellite. Actually, no, I mean, based on the numbers, we're averaging between 40 and 60 per episode, from what I can see.
Which really isn't that bad.
It's but not prob- that it, bad.
But by now it probably has dropped because...
we have released it like a month, yeah. I must give a return shout-out to Aaron, who did mention us on Sci-Fi Dig episode 165. And was also complaining that we hadn't actually released in a while, and I did send him a return voicemail. You see, Aaron, we send voicemails.
Yeah, see?
There you go, listeners. Send voicemails.
Yeah, we'll actually play them on the show so you can hear your voice and say you're famous.
In a sort of relatively limited capacity.
Well, I was going to say, as famous as you can be listening to a podcast that only has 50 listeners.
You know, this thing doesn't actually...
But yes, one of my moderators at the Farpoint forums was complaining yesterday that we hadn't released in a while, so... You know, I told him that we were recording today, so...
Good. I've shut down all non-essential programs. I've realized how many non-essential programs I actually have running on this PC, because I closed about 6 of them from the system tray.
I have... Well, actually, the only thing I have right now is Notepad, Firefox, and Gizmo.
No, in the system tray, I have ATI, Peer Guardian, my printer, Gizmo. Oh, Picasa. I can kill Picasa.
Okay, so other in my system tray, I just have AVG and my sound control. The sound
well,
card.
And Gizmo, presumably. Need antivirus, obviously. I've got the wireless controller running as well. Anyway, it's completely non-Stargate related, unless we can somehow spin having a wireless controller attached into something vaguely Stargate related. Why don't we stop vamping? I'm not in editing mode. Why don't we stop vamping and just plunge into the episode?
Okay.
Well, and I still think it's one of my... thank you, Gatewolf, for the transcript. It helps to refer.
I actually watched the episode.
Sorry, I did watch the episode.
And
watched
I took
the episode
notes.
While we were recording it.
And I took notes. See?
I may have Asperger's. I don't do notes. I rely on my considerably enhanced memory. Yes, seriously.
I know, but it's just I always get a kick out of the name because it just sounds so bizarre. But anyway.
It was named after a Viennese scientist called Kurt Asperger.
I know, but it's still one of those kind of names that you hear and you just giggle.
Purely because you're American and it starts with the word ass. That's the only reason you find it amusing.
Actually, because it has burger in it, too. Yeah, see?
But the,
us Americans are immature about that kind of thing.
Yeah, so, obviously you eat too many burgers, you get a big ass, therefore you have ass burger. Yes, okay.
There you go.
A burger ass, yeah. Okay, fair enough. I can see where that's coming from. It's an interesting etymological diversion, but...
Anyway, let's get on with this now.
if we can see the insane vamping and come on, it's one of my favorite scenes, and it's one I think we might have audio for, do we?
Some of these planets designated P3575 and P3877 have been submitted by Captain Carter's team as possible destinations for your next mission. SG Units 1 and 2 will operate concurrently.
You know, I'm kind of partial to P3575. You don't mind taking P3877.
No, I'll take
that. I'm not married to it.
No,
I want to be fair about this. How about we flip it?
How about you go where I took?
Because it's the scene where they're it's actually the opening scene, and it really establishes Jack's whole approach to authority and life in general.
Unfortunately, I don't have the clips anymore.
Oh, okay, fair enough.
Well, we'll have to drop it in.
I told you to delete stuff yesterday, and you deleted the clips. Okay.
Actually, that is what happened.
Okay, so this is my fault. Wonderful. Essentially, this scene, I can describe it on you. Okay, let me just open it, because I'm going to take a sort of helicopter view at the risk of using a horrendous analogy. I suppose this episode is really about two things. I mean, the enemy within, and it's taken from two themes. You've got Teok, who's essentially locked away and not trusted. And, I mean, as Hammond says, you know, he switched side once. From a military perspective, Hammond's opinion makes sense.
Very much
you know,
so.
He switched sides once. There's no reason he wouldn't switch sides again.
That does make a lot of sense, though, too.
So it makes a lot of sense if you think with a military mind. Are you deeply paranoid and mistrustful?
Yeah, well, that sounds like the U.S. military right there.
Yes, and I'm surprised. I mean, had it been filmed a little later, they might have been searching Teok for WMDs.
Yeah, I know.
Okay, sorry, I've gone off this. Trying to see how art imitates life. But the opening scene, so you've got Twin, you've got Mistrust, and the fact is, I suppose, at the risk of jumping ahead, the very mistrust of Teok is completely misplaced due to the fact that it's not Teok they should be mistrusting.
Oh yeah, but they don't know that yet.
They don't know yet, and we see it, I suppose it establishes it, it's cruelly manipulative of your emotions considering what's going to happen to them. But even that nice little opening scene with O'Neill and Kowalski arguing about which planet they should take. Well, not arguing, sort of discussing and tossing it backwards and forwards, and then having sort of flips out and says,
You
could just go where I tell you.
Yeah, I know.
this guy throws that off.
He just, you know. And of course, he ends up sending Kowalski to the planet that O'Neill wanted to go to. He had a brain fart there.
Mm-hmm. I think, yeah, because Kowalski says he'll take 577.
Yeah, and
O'Neill is quite happy to take P3575.
And that's where Hammond sends Kowalski to.
Yeah, and then, of course, we see our first, instance of things hitting the Earth.
Yep.
And we have another little exchange. This is one I would like to drop in. So just be the Earth is going to hold, right, see?
Reset the counter. Here we go again. All defense. Remain in position.
Iris is going to hold, right?
Pure titanium, less than 3 micrometers from the event horizon. It won't even allow matter to fully reintegrate.
So this Iris is going to hold, right?
If it doesn't, the failsafe device will detonate, this whole mountain will vaporize, and there'll be nothing to worry about.
Ah, good. I feel much better.
Okay,
coming back into the episode. I don't know if you want to go through, if you want to bounce backwards and forward, if you want to hit favorite themes or what.
Well, I was just going to run through and we could discuss some of the notes that I had and some of the notes that you had, but you didn't have any notes, so I was just
going to... I have an eidetic memory. I don't need notes.
Well, you can go ahead and throw out the parts that you like, and I'll go ahead and throw the things I like, and we can discuss them.
Well, like I said, I like that little mood establishing thing between Kowalski and O'Neill at the start, because it sort of shows, even in a little 5-second scene, that little byplay back and forth shows that these guys are friends.
Well, they've worked together and several times, and you know it makes sense.
They went on the first mission together.
Sort of
bonding through adversity and all that. Oh, sorry, I tripped over a vacuum cleaner cord yesterday morning and banjaxed my knee.
Well, if it hurts, don't do it.
Yeah, standing and walking are kind of requirements.
But anyway.
That little byplay, and again, the interesting thing, and it's an observation I've made, it's not something they use much subsequently. They obviously decided to drop it, but after that initial attack through the Iris, you had the radiation team moving in.
I think I've seen it a few times, but I don't think they've used it on every episode where there's an undesired
Well, unless there's actual radiation.
Yeah.
There have been instances of that, but we'll discuss those when we come to. There's actually, I think we see a lot of establishment here. Like I said, the main theme in this is it's very neatly captured in the title. It is the enemy within.
That's like kind of a big spoiler unto itself right there.
No, we're discussing the episode. We can spoil the episode within episode discussions.
Oh, I know, but...
we don't have to keep to a strict timeline. Are you sending me chats? And
I'm actually sending you my notes so you know what I'm going to be what I want to talk about.
Didn't you do that already? Oh, no, that was your notes on emancipation.
Yeah.
Sorry. Hmm. But the enemy within your duel, you have Teok as a potential enemy within, and whether or not Teok was an enemy even within Apophis's ranks.
I hadn't thought of it that way.
Well, neither had I. These things are occurring to me as I think about it. Brain makes connections. and you have Demor, and of course now you have Teok seen as potentially he's an enemy non-human.
Yeah, that
and we will come back to that scene, and this is just a mild spoiler. We'll come back to that scene when, you know the episode I mean? You do know the episode I mean, don't I?
I believe
don't
so.
Don't you? The concept of how the Jafar are created, that is dealt with, I think, in Series 1.
With, what's her name?
Hathor.
Yeah, that is, it's actually not on this disc. Or that disc.
Well, no,
it's Season 1, I know that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we'll come back to exploring that. That's not really a spoiler as such, but we'll tell you how Jafar create when we cover the episode with Hathor in it.
Yeah, it is Hathor. That's the name of the episode.
Fair enough. But again, so and we have Teok again as a potential enemy within on the camp, as
13.
within SG-1, and then we have Kowalski, who is the rather unfortunate, more literal enemy within them. So I suppose you've got the battle without, maybe getting a little overly philosophical here, but you've got the battle with Teok and the Goa'uld and what they represent, and then you've got the battle within because you have Kowalski with an immature Goa'uld, which actually leapt out of the pouch from a Jaffa, and then Kowalski just before we got end credits. I mean, what a nice little cliffhanger, actually. What a way to wrap up Children of the Gods.
Yeah, but I wonder how many people actually caught that the first time they watched it.
I did, I think.
I don't remember that far. Because I told you that when... SG-1 originally started when it was on Showtime. I didn't like it, so I probably didn't catch it.
Oh, I didn't see it when it started originally. I think I actually picked it up about halfway through Season 3, and then Sky 1 started showing it every evening at 5.
Oh, okay.
And I caught the start of the run. And I realized it was a really good show. BBC Two, being BBC Two, used to show it really late at night as well, so I'd come in from the pub and watch it.
You alcoholic, you.
I'm not drinking now. Probably because it's not 9 o'clock yet. Hey,
anyway.
You gotta have rules and structure. And besides, I'm detoxing for 3 weeks.
Ah.
I'll be drinking tonight, but then I'll be sober for the next 3 weeks. No dairy and no bread.
I wouldn't be able to do that because I love cheese and I love bread.
Oh, I love cheese and bread too, but we can get onto my probiotic diet later.
Anyway,
it's not really relevant for Sega unless you want to discuss how Daniel. I suppose we can hit on development of characters. Teok here is the Teok here. I think he plays pretty much the same character for the first couple of seasons. He's very sort of he's worrying inside a bit to some extent, but I'm talking to him, what you talk?
Well, yeah, he is, but, you know, probably, I think it's like second or third season, you actually see that he likes Earth movies and everything, so that I think that's when he starts lightening up, so I think you're mm-hmm. I think you're right that he is kind of doing that for the first couple of years, and then it kind of evens out. Just like the idea of an alien liking Star Wars. Sorry, I.
Well, you got to look at it from a cross cultural standpoint of it. This is a man who's been on faster than light spaceships.
Uh huh.
And has traveled the universe and has met alien species and killed them.
And yet, he likes Star Wars.
He likes Star Wars. He probably admires the absurdity of it. I'm sure there are a lot of. Didn't you say that the military actually got very precious about Stargate?
Very much so, because especially with Walter, how one person referred to him by the wrong rank, and they said, no, he is such and such, you know, so,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, like I said, at the risk of an aside, which I might have said the original time when we recorded this is take two, folks, as Scott said. Babylon 5 used to be watched by the NASA people.
Yeah,
because they had access
to
the satellite downlink.
And they watched it before we did.
Yeah. Well, what's the point of having all this equipment? I mean, heaven forfend, you should use it to look at moon missions or something.
See, what I like about science fiction, and you know, this kind of plays off the military being precious about Stargate. Just the fact that sci-fi shows seem to just inspire the scientists and, you know, people wanting to become astronauts.
That's always been the case. I mean,
Asimov
was a huge scientist. I mean, he published more papers than he did fiction books.
Oh, I know. I'm just saying that it just, if it wasn't for science fiction, you know, there wouldn't be as many astronauts. I'm sure of that.
Yeah, I mean, how many astronauts are there that are actually were actually inspired by science fiction? I mean, I know when I was a kid, I read a lot of science fiction.
You mean you don't now?
Sorry?
You mean you don't
now? No, but the point is, consider what I'm doing now for a career.
Yeah.
I work in IT, folks, if I didn't say that in episode zero.
You probably said it.
So we come on down. I mean, we send Kowalski off to the, and here we see actually, and I said this before last time we recorded, we see the first reference to fishing.
Yeah, that was
which seems to be a continuous theme.
But I think that was just O'Neill being a smart aleck, and then they kind of just decided to just kind of work that into his character.
Mm-hmm. And we also see with this first scene, we see Hammond sort of, this is the officialdom, and it's Colonel Kennedy who I think will later be, or is actually heading. Is NID mentioned in this episode?
No.
You actually commented that you found it funny because Colonel Kennedy from Command is actually Dharma's dad from Dharma and Greg.
Yeah, so.
And you found it very difficult to take him seriously.
Well, I mean, come on. The guy in Dharma and Greg is a stoner, and he's, you know,
as anti-establishment
sticking it to the man, you know, and now he is a man.
Yeah. I wonder, did this, okay, folks. This,
I'm sure this came
dynamic,
up before it.
This is dynamic IMDb. But, I'm going to check it. You talk about the episode for a bit while I IMDb.
Oh, you're making me do this. Usually, you're the one that makes me look it up. All right,
I'll do it. You can vamp.
But anyway.
I hear my voice too much.
Yeah, well, you talk too much anyway. But, pretty much, when O'Neill, you know, back to the whole fishing thing, that's when O'Neill goes in there and wants to talk about Teal'c. And Hammond says, you know, I'm rejecting your request. Because, like we mentioned, Colonel Kennedy is going, and obviously he wants to ask some questions and everything. And, let's see, where are we here? You're making me talk, and I'm having a brain fart now. But, anyway, pretty much that's because he's the first alien, and he's, actually, he was one of the enemy. You know, they want to do some tests and ask him a bunch of questions and everything. And, you know, obviously, O'Neill says, you know, I don't think he saved the lives of my team, you know, so he can be a test, you know, a guinea pig. And Hammond turns around and says, he switched sides once. Are you sure you won't switch back? And obviously O'Neill says yes, so... You know, obviously Hammond, you know, being the military guy that he is, he says, you're alone in that assertion. And obviously he says, you know, he'll be I promise he'll be treated with respect and, you know, blah, 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 all that fun stuff. And now he goes to O'Neill goes to talk to Teal'c. And I believe the first time we talked about this, you were mentioning that Teal'c was actually trying humor, I believe you said, when Jack says, am I interrupting anything? And says, Teal'c says, yes. And
yeah, I mentioned that. Actually, it's hard to tell which was first. According to this, he appeared in Stargate SG-1 in 1997. And Dharma and Greg also started in 97, so he may have done both at the same time.
That's a weird whiplash situation. Two totally different ends of the stick.
Yeah, well, one he's sticking it to the man, the other one he's got the stick up his butt.
Yeah, I could have done without that image.
we can but try.
Oh, there's the phone. Coming back in.
I just see here, I always thought Teal'c was spelt the same way as Teal'c was. As in a sort of T apostrophe.
It's
C-H-U-L-A-K on the transcript. I don't recall what way they spelled that in the closed captioning.
That'd be an interesting thing to pull up. But I'm pretty sure by now, no one's in the series, no one really had it written down, so...
Well, of course it has to be written down. It has to be written down. It's in a script.
That's not what I meant.
It's got to be written down somewhere.
That's not what I meant. Oh, that is kind of how it came out. No, what I meant is, on the episodes themselves, on the commercials, no one really has had it written down until, the DVDs came out and, could see the names.
The closed captioning is kind of hard to get at unless you actually have a device.
Yeah, well, like mine. Windows Media Player will actually...
Yes, I know. Don't praise Microsoft in my presence.
I'm not. I'm just saying it actually will do it, and so will VLC, I believe. No, not VLC.
No, not
GOM Player. I think it's GOM.
I'm just playing with my LED Xeon torch.
That's a flashlight all of us over in this part of the planet.
Hey, I say theater. You say. Actually, what do you? I think that's the point.
I say theater, and you say cinema.
Yeah. So what do you call theaters?
Theaters.
Doesn't that confuse things?
No. We usually refer to them as movie theater.
Right.
Here. Hey, now this is getting into a culture cast.
We can go off topic.
I know.
Oh, and there's actually a reference in the interview with which you just mentioned between Teal'c and O'Neill, and it's the first sort of real scene. It's certainly the first scene where you've got a two-shot, as it were. I've been reading script books, and I know the appropriate phrases to use.
I wouldn't.
Like when I was watching CSI the other... I don't know if you want to cut this out or not, but I was watching CSI the other evening, and you got what's called a beauty shot. There's a beauty shot of this little kid's bike with his nameplate on it. And I saw that and I thought, he's dead. You see a beauty shot of the kid's bike and it's done in slow motion in bright sunlight. I'm thinking, he's dead. He's
and
gone.
Is that what happened?
Yep.
It's kind of sad when the shots themselves give spoilers.
I don't think somebody is sort of preternaturally aware.
I
read through like six volumes of Babylon 5 script books in the space of about a fortnight.
Well, you're just a freak
when it comes to
that.
My head's kind of stuffed full of terminology.
Yeah, well, the only thing I have that could be considered a script book is it's got notes and everything. It's for Star Wars A New Hope. You know, the first good one. Has pictures and artwork and all that, and it actually has the full script. So that's the closest thing I've got to a script book.
I also have the Neil Gaiman script book for the episode, because it wasn't released at the time. But Neil Gaiman released a single volume thing of just his script for Day of the Dead from Season 5 and B5. And I have it signed and personalized by him. It's still sealed in plastic, and it remains sealed in plastic. I'm not going to open it. Especially since I can read the script myself. I mean, I opened it briefly to look at the dedication, which I'd requested.
Oh, that makes sense, because, you know, you did request it. Mm-hmm. But you see, you have all kinds of cool stuff, and mine, the most impressive thing I have is, what, 60 or so DVDs?
Let's just not discuss my DVD collection. Let's move swiftly on from that. My DVD collection embarrasses me.
Which you should be proud of it, if it's huge. But anyway.
Yes, I know, but I don't have time to watch it.
Okay, that's kind of embarrassing. If you don't have time to watch them, that's just sad.
I know. I just got to acquire.
Me, I
but,
just put a DVD
the,
or two
the
in a week.
Point. The exchange between O'Neill and Teok. Teok goes, why is O'Neill not afraid? And O'Neill goes, Teok, I saw you stand up to a god, refuse to kill. I saw you make that decision. Teok says, I guess. In that moment, I learned everything I needed to know to trust you.
And this was almost... This is O'Neill's version of humor.
Yeah, Teok goes, if I had killed you, then I would not be here now.
O'Neill
says, yeah. Kind of reminds me of the opening of... The trailer for Get Smart, the new version.
Yeah, I probably should go see that.
You know, it's like if I were control, you would already be dead. If you were control, you would already be dead. Since neither of us is dead, I mustn't be control. It actually makes sense.
I'm sure that's not a new joke. So I mean, you know.
No, probably not. Probably somewhat Zucker Brothers. If I can make a brief recommendation, if y'all haven't seen it yet, go see Iron Man.
And the Hulk?
I'm not sure I did like the Hulk. I missed the very start of it. The plot's paper thin. I mean, Iron Man actually has more of a plot.
Oh, yeah. But the thing is, it has everything a Hulk movie should have.
Yeah. Including the words Hulk smash.
Actually, when I saw it, some of the people in the theater were like, "Yeah!" They actually kind of screamed that at the screen.
Wait, when he said Hulk smash?
Yes.
We're getting way off topic.
Oh yeah.
Sorry, can we just touch? How long have we been going? Allowing for vamp time and so on. We're at 42 minutes.
We should kick it up because we're still in the first 15 minutes of the episode.
All right. Well, we do have... Let's spin on briefly. We have Kowalski, who obviously got the Gould within, came up and took him over and killed the Doctor.
Mm-hmm.
And Doctor...
I don't even think there's a name for that doctor.
There is. There's. It says Dr. Nimziki.
Oh, okay. Oh, there it is. Yeah, you're right. But he's supposed to be on call.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Werner, the chief surgeon, pops in. Kind of seems like a waste of his talents, but, you know, the other guy's not going to show up.
He's probably just wandering around to... That's an interesting point. When did Werner get replaced by Fraser? We'll take note of that.
Because I don't think he should have been replaced, because I think there was an episode several seasons in because of Michello or whatever, and he shows up again.
Maybe he got promoted.
And he helped... Well, it says right here he's the chief surgeon. So that might, you know, kind of imply that she's just the everyday, ordinary doctor, and he's the, you know...
I don't think she's appeared at this point.
She hasn't.
So we're spoiling. Oh, well.
Yeah, well.
Oh, well, for the three people who listen who haven't actually seen any of SG-1.
Putting salad dressing on a salad right now.
Just vinegar and mustard, right?
Raspberry vinaigrette.
For God's sake. Laced with sugar.
Hey, I like the taste of it.
Obviously.
Anyway.
We have Teok being helpful in an interview.
Yes.
With Colonel Kennedy sort of firing questions at him.
And then permission, and then, you know, obviously...
Teok being his typically voluble self.
I just like when O'Neill pops in. Permission to barge in, sir.
Does he have to say that?
Yes. I'll scroll down and look. Let's see here. Thank you, Teok.
Oh, yes. It's not magic, Teok. They just want you to think that. Permission to barge in, sir. The omission of Prof. and Sherlock made the most engrossing analysis of my career. I don't remember that bit.
Thanks. What was your favorite part?
And then O'Neill, you can't actually see the instructions because obviously, but he leans over the secretary who's writing stuff down. That's Teok with an apostrophe. T-E-A-O apostrophe C.
Wow, they even in the transcript, they actually put Jack Mouth to Hammond Wee.
Yes. Well, technically it's a word. It probably appears in the closed captioning.
Maybe not, because you can read his lips.
Most,
a lot of deaf and hard of hearing people learn to read lips as a way to get around. So, you know, I don't know. They may have done it.
We're getting sort of vaguely back on topic. We do have a major reveal here, which is the fact that it's the first mention of the Tauri.
Ah, yeah. I did have a clip of that, too.
What is it with the Gould and apostrophes?
I don't know.
Somebody's been a little free with pressing the apostrophe.
The Gould, Teok, Tauri, you know. Wonder what else is next.
We will find out when we come to the appropriate episodes.
I know.
Although, if I can spoil very briefly, I still say my favorite Gould is Baal.
Like Bocce?
Sorry?
Like Bocce?
Bocce?
Oh, come on. That was something O'Neill actually said when O'Neill told him his name. Anyway.
I don't get the reference, sorry.
Well, I'm just quoting O'Neill.
We come back to Kowalski and the MRI, and you spot something slightly dodgy on Kowalski's MRI.
Yeah, slightly red. And snake-like. Mm-hmm. Okay, so
which
he has a Gould.
Because MRIs don't actually resolve in color.
Well, you know they did that for, you know, just visual.
MRIs aren't 3D either, I mean. That the best thing you get for that is a PET scanner, of course, therefore is a post-processor. Sorry. This is me poking holes again. Might as well... look, I have knowledge of cognitive science and scanning techniques, so I might as well bring it in.
Well, we're geeks. We do that anyway. And there are
I'm
a lot of scientists.
I'm surprised I didn't mention it last time. Probably because I was typically trying to watch the episode and focus. No, I don't think I did.
Well, you can always go back and listen to it.
No, I don't want to listen to it.
Yeah, it was that bad. Anyway.
there's a bonus prize, actually. For those of you who want it, for every entrance into the competition, I'll pull up a link that you can download. It'll be a closed link. It won't be directly accessible from the site, but you can, if you enter the competition, you can download and listen to our raw, unedited version 1 of this episode of The Mood So Takes You. Or does that, would you disagree with that, Scott?
That could be fun, but it might be a kind of a bad idea. You know, they can see just how bad we really are.
No, this would actually be a good idea. They could see actually how much effort we put in. You think the show sounds bad now, you just hear it before we hit it.
Okay, so you got a point there.
Kowalski, yeah, this is the ghoul has risen within Kowalski. And he comes along and basically...
and he doesn't
kill
the doctor.
Sorry? No, he didn't kill Warner. The implication is he just knocked him out or something.
Yeah. Like he does with Carter.
Yeah, he sort of kidnaps Carter, but... I mean, the other question we're discussing now, I think I agree that something of the host does remain, and that's a theme which goes back to Children of the Gods. Daniel's desperation to remain with Sharae is such that he's prepared to actually become a host. Dead air, not good, Scott.
Sorry, I muted my headphone. Anyway, I hate this microphone. I broke it and then I fixed it so we could record, so I didn't have to buy a new mic, and yeah. Anyway, what was I saying? Not like you could hear. well, yeah, no, something of the host must survive actually carries on well through the what, 7th, 8th season?
Possibly. It's been a while since I've seen the 8th season. I don't actually have season 9 or season 10.
I only have season 1.
Is there... Actually, is it? I wonder if it's reasonably priced. Because what I might consider doing is picking up the... You know, I presume they have an ultimate box set thingy.
They do. Someone...
Let's not mention who they are. Say Universal have a Fox, Warner Brothers, whatever.
MGM.
Have an Ultimate Universe box theme.
No. Someone from the Farpoint forums, one of my moderators, he gave me a site where he got it from, and he paid, I think, $90 for it. And that's American.
Yeah, US dollars. Let's not confuse ourselves with Australian dollars or New Zealand dollars or Canadian dollars.
Okay, so, yeah.
Or pesos. I only said that because you said okay, so, and I just thought I'd throw the word peso in there because it seemed phonetically right. Well, I can't do this. 52 minutes.
Yeah, okay. Anyway.
Excuse me?
No.
No, a belching mix using with it. We see Kowalski's come back to himself in the elevator having basically used Carter as a pinball.
Yeah, bouncing her off the wall. And of course, you know, he's all scared saying, I don't have a clue, but she's hurt bad. We have to get her to the infirmary.
I was thinking, yeah, you did it, dude.
But you see, since he had a blackout earlier, you'd think by now he might have put two and two together.
Well, perhaps the ghoul is blocking it.
Either that or he's not as intelligent as he seems.
Did he actually seem that intelligent? I mean, he's a grunt. He's a military man. Is intelligence really a requirement? This isn't a battlefield assessment situation, you see. He's rather more esoteric than your average sort of marine is trained for.
Well...
Now I'm probably going to get complaints from the Air Force saying that SGC is Air Force, it's not Marines.
Well, no, he didn't seem like an idiot, so...
Some people can have remarkable blind spots.
Yeah, okay.
Sorry, this is a psych student in me coming out again. Hey, I'm qualified, Jim.
I finished
the degree, anyway.
That's not a bad price for it. There you go. $137.
Including delivery?
Good point. Where is this coming from?
Oh, Deals World on that.
Yeah, like it really... .net. Like it really even has their address on there. Anyway.
But we see Warner discussing the removal of the parasite. Now, this is a... They do say parasite, don't they?
Yeah, several times. I think
it's
even...
It's not a parasite.
I think even... Teal'c even mentions it once.
I know they correct themselves later on, because it is a symbiote. But it's not a parasite. I had this argument with you in Children of the Gods. Parasites kill the host.
Yeah.
This extends the life of the host.
But that doesn't change the fact that even symbiotes are parasitic in some ways.
No, so, well, true symbiotes are actually beneficial.
Yeah, I know. But, they do eat some of the food in some cases that the person eats, so you can look at it like they
They're likening it to a parasite in the terms of a tapeworm, which doesn't necessarily kill the host, but doesn't exactly do the host a lot of good.
Yeah, that's kind of,
I think that's, they're not going with, they're calling them snakes, but fundamentally they're attributing it as a parasitical organism due to it being a tapeworm.
But
similar
if you look
to
at
a tapeworm, I think.
But if you look at it one way, it's pretty much killing the mind of the person who is inhabiting it. Granted, later, if the ghoul comes out, they would be back to normal. But, I guess it just matters
unless
the way you
look
at
it. Unless they'd been sort of in the ghoul for a few hundred years, in which case they'd probably be dead.
No, actually, I won't say because this is a spoiler.
We won't spoil, yeah, that's much, much later.
You know the person I'm talking about.
I think so, yeah.
He's a god. Teal'c's
so,
god.
Okay, this is broken to, Kenneth Kowalski, that he's actually managed to kill someone.
Do they even mention the ghoul's name?
I don't think the ghoul has a name, it's an infant. And it certainly doesn't offer its name. We actually see O'Neill refer to Kowalski by his first name, which is a definite sign that we don't think he's going to survive the episode.
Not always. Because you hear Sam mentioned all the time. And she always...
Well, Sam isn't actually... Not by Jack.
Well, by just about every
generally,
character.
Generally, the first names are used by... Pretty much it's Daniel. Daniel who used the first name. Daniel refers to Jack pretty much from day one as Jack.
Well, yeah.
But Jack refers to Sam as Carter. Teal'c, I don't think... Jesus, I can't recall a point at which Teal'c used first names. Or if he uses first name, he doesn't use first name, he'll use the entire name. I think Teal'c's trying to... I don't think Teal'c realizes where Daniel... This is an interesting point, it's an aside, but still relevant. I don't think Teal'c can quite fit Daniel into the military hierarchy, which is why he refers to him as Daniel Jackson. Because there's no rank. So maybe he's seeing the rank as a form of first name, because he doesn't refer to Colonel Samantha Carter, he just refers to... Or Major Carter, or whatever.
Well, later...
Maybe even, later, but not initially.
Well, I was going to say, even in the Atlantis episode, I think he still calls her Major Carter. So, I think you're right.
Is that not spoiling?
Yeah, well... By the time we get to the Atlantis episodes, people will have already forgotten.
Yeah, but people could go back and listen to this and check.
Oh, okay.
You forget, once it's up there forever. Or as long as they keep up the domain renewal.
Oh, okay.
We see Teal'c explaining that this is where they go to Teal'c and look and check that he still has the thing within him.
And it's funny how that was something...
That was a cutaway to a torso shot there.
Well, what I think is kind of funny is O'Neill was, or, you know, Jack was so upset about the questioning. He didn't seem very upset when they went in there to check the symbiote, which just, I thought was kind of interesting.
Well, look at it for the look at it from this standpoint. It may have cast a shadow of doubt in O'Neill's mind. If Teok was really sort of buddy-buddy and Pallion on their sides, why would he allow his symbiote to take over Kowalski, a guy O'Neill's known for, like, whatever, 10 years or something?
Oh, okay. Well, there are
Teok is just Matt. Kowalski's his good friend.
Yeah.
Well, look at it from O'Neill's perspective.
I know, I just think it's kind of interesting that, you know, he didn't even, you know, if Jack later in the series, he's the kind of person that would have gone in by himself and checked, you know, instead of with all the other guys. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you'd think that he would have at least wanted to do it in a courteous manner, but I don't know.
I'm reading the, I'm having a scan through the transcript, the conversation between O'Neill and Kowalski about.
That's funny. Kowalski, snake mode. Nemesis Kree. Right here it says Kowalski, snake mode. Nemesis Kree.
Yeah.
A person who wrote this has, you know, an interesting way to do things.
I've been trying to transcript an interview I did in May today. It took me 40 minutes to transcribe about 7 minutes of actual conversation.
Do you type that slow?
What? No, you got to keep going back and checking and replaying and doing indistinct words and so on.
I would just do like one sentence and then pause. Type it in.
Sorry?
I would do one sentence, pause, then type.
You got to switch between applications then?
Not if you use a media player that you can change in the settings to have it always on top. And there are several media players that you can do that.
Hmm. Anyway, that's definitely off.
Or, if you have a media keyboard where you can hit pause on the keyboard. But anyway.
Yeah.
We're really getting off topic again. Maybe it's just the episode.
Kowalski, host mode. Don't shoot.
Host mode? That is just sad. I like how they put a little winky, winking smile there, too.
Yeah.
I should go through and read most of these, because it sounds like some of these might be pretty funny. Anyway.
Yes, a classic sort of Hammond moment. This conversation is over. That's pure military.
Oh yeah, but I think it's pretty funny where he says something about a snowball's chance in hell if it's gonna save my officer. I want it done, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we almost the invading parasite in major Kowalski's body could be safely removed.
And this one shows.
Here we hear this is Kennedy just being fucking sorry. But I might believe that. But this is kind of just being evil.
What is?
He's suggesting that they leave the snake in Kowalski so they can take him away and study him.
Yeah. But it goes to show you that they always have to put one person that's got like a morally, you know,
bankrupt?
Great, I was going to say, yeah, okay, that's a better word. Someone that's morally bankrupt with someone that's got very good morals. So that's where the whole Hammond and Kennedy thing goes, because, you know, they got to have them playing against each other. I think it came out pretty good, though.
Mm-hmm. And Teok sort of coming in from the girl's perspective and explaining that no, a girl would not willingly share any knowledge.
Yeah, so they'd have to torture it, but, you know, it wouldn't quite work. And then they show, a little bit after that, they're in the infirmary, and they show Teal'c with this little device on there holding the Gould, you know.
Out, and sort of giving it anesthetic.
Which, I thought that would have been kind of weird for Teal'c. But I'm sure, you know, he's an intelligent guy. He probably would have understood. But I think that would have been uncomfortable for him to consent to.
I don't know about uncomfortable. He might have been slightly stoned.
Wow. No, I'm kidding. No, it just would have been uncomfortable.
Teal'c's sort of an LSD type of thing.
Well, no, I just think it would have been very uncomfortable for him to consent to.
Well, he's trying to prove himself.
Well, yeah.
I mean, he consented to it because he's still not considered a free person.
And obviously,
he's prepared to considering what he did under the Ga'ul, he's probably prepared to do pretty much anything to.
He's pretty much probably.
He's fundamentally alone.
Well, I was gonna say I'm pretty sure he's willing to give his life to prove that he's, you know,
mm-hmm.
changed.
He may consider, I think we see some of it later on, he doesn't necessarily consider himself as deserving to live.
Well, they show that a lot.
With some of the things that he's done.
They show that quite a bit. I think even in, is it in the first season? Corelli? Yeah?
Yeah, there's an episode in the first season, I think.
Yes, yeah, right after the Hathor episode, so it'd be episode 14. But what I thought was
we'll come to that sometime in September or October or something.
Probably, you know, January.
We're gonna have to record a stack of episodes in September.
I think we should try to get two episodes done each time for a couple weeks.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, back to the thing. What I thought was kind of fun. You have Kowalski and Jack talking. And, you know, typical Jack, you know, after, you know, he says, you know, Kowalski says, you know, I want you to know no matter what happens here, it's an honor to serve with you. And O'Neill being, you know, the typical O'Neill, he says, listen, I got to ask you something. It's not easy for me. Kowalski, we're friends. O'Neill, if you don't make it, can I have your stereo? I mean, that's one heck of a segue, and, you know, it actually would probably be something I would say, too.
Well, if I don't make it, can you have my DVD collection?
Or something like that, yeah.
You can, if I don't make it, you can have my DVD. It's a nice DVD. I'm not sure it would fit in your apartment.
Hey, if I had the money, I'd have a 50-some-odd-inch TV in here.
Yeah, you get plasma, though. I mean, go for LCD. Image quality is much sharper.
Oh, yeah.
Plasma has ghosting and stuff. Anyway. Oh, anaesthetist. The anaesthetist doesn't have a name. The anaesthetist is just called anaesthetist.
How about nurse?
Yeah, nurse. Why is the nurse saying scalpel? Surely it should be the doctor saying scalpel. I mean, is the nurse making the initial incision?
Unless she's handing it to him.
Possibly. But isn't it in the way that...
Later,
supposed to play the doctor,
later she says
the doctor's
scissors. Scissors, you know.
I mean, it's your classic sort of operation montage scene.
Yeah, which is pretty generic.
Yeah, and you see the clock.
And complete with a small seizure, too.
Mm-hmm.
They always seem to have a seizure. I don't know why they always do that, though.
Possibly. I mean, there's a... somebody said to me, this is a brief aside into another series I started watching recently, which is House. And Jeffrey Dorigo, hey Jeff, says there's a House drinking game. Every time they say his kidneys are shutting down, you take a glass of your favorite whiskey. They usually say it two or three times per episode.
I'm assuming you're pretty drunk.
I did suggest every time House takes a Vicodin, you drink whiskey, but Jeffrey figured you'd be dead inside about 2 weeks if you watch two episodes of House a day at the end of Vicodin, the guy goes through.
Well, I do believe that there was a Stargate drinking game where one of the rules was every time Teal'c said indeed, you took a drink.
Oh, that's the point. We don't have an indeed count for this episode, do we? I don't think he actually says it in this episode.
You know what? We have a transcript right here.
We have a transcript. That's true. I could just find. This is cool. This will help with the Indeed, Kim. No, it's not there.
Yeah, I'm not finding it either. I even tried a couple misspellings to make sure that it, you know.
And it's not an emancipation either.
Hmm.
So the Indeed count for, so according to the Gateworld transcript, the Indeed count for episode 102, The Enemy Within, is zero. We have zero Indeed. Admittedly, I would say Teal'c only probably gets about maybe 10 minutes of screen time in this episode. This is mostly O'Neill and Kowalski.
He does have some of the most important points, though. He does have some of the most important parts, though.
Oh, he has some of the most important parts, but he's not on screen very often. I mean, there are episodes which feature... I would say this is an O'Neill... I suppose we could do this as well. I'm sorry, I've been watching all Star Trek again. I've turned into Chekhov. Nuclear vessels.
The nuclear vessels in Alameda. Anyway.
Yeah, Chekhov wasn't bad, but to be honest with you, his best character remains Alfred Bester.
You're just biased.
It's a good character.
Well, it was a good show, but I'm not sure I liked the character. So, anyway, let's get back to Stargate.
You weren't meant to like the character. I mean, I'm quite keen on it. I mean, I told you, my favorite girl is bald. Doesn't mean I'd actually go out for a drink with him. In fact, I definitely not. You'll wake up, find yourself in a clone tank or something.
Now who's giving spoilers?
That doesn't have any relevance. Completely out of context.
Are you sure about that?
Fairly sure. So the operation ends, and we see, because I'm looking at the time, and even allowing for our vamping, allowing for time to actually drop the audio clips in, we're at an hour and 11 minutes.
Wow.
Allowing for the crapology that we did. I mean, if it comes in a little short, it comes in a little short.
Well, now the operation is a success, and...
operation?
Shut up. I'm tired. I was eating at the same time, too. Actually, I was swallowing. Now you see Hammond and Kennedy wanting to...
Not much operation is almost accidental aspiration.
Anyway, Kennedy and... Shut up. Kennedy and Hammond are arguing about taking Teal'c to Langley and,
Is it Langley?
Yes. He says, I have orders to return to Langley.
Isn't Langley the head of the CIA?
I think so.
Why would a military man be going to the CIA base?
Unless they have a research lab there.
This is a pothole.
Maybe.
Oh, and let's not forget, when Kowalski wakes up, we see yet another Wizard of Oz reference.
Really? Oh, yeah, this is not a dream. Yeah, I forgot about that one.
No, that's right, Dorothy, it was all a dream. So there we have a Wizard of Oz reference. We can ask for feedback, actually, folks. Let us know if we missed any Wizard of Oz references.
I totally forgot.
I was scrolling down to where you were talking about and I spotted that sentence.
I didn't catch it.
This isn't my incredible memory kicking in. This is the Gateworld transcript.
And then
I like that with O'Neill as well. Here, easy big fella, you're not drinking for two anymore. I'm sure the Pregnant Women's Association of America or something had issues with that.
I'm sure there is
a Pregnant Women's Association of America.
And then you see Kowalski telling Carter that he wants to talk to Teal'c. And obviously he's a Gould, and he starts choking Teal'c, saying, if you serve me, you know, blah, blah, blah.
Yes. Snake mode again. Snake mode again! Exclamation mark!
I'm getting a kick out of their stuff.
Let's be honest with you, Kowalski couldn't choke Teal. Teal's neck's about 3 foot wide.
Well, notice he uses two hands.
Yeah, but he couldn't actually wrap his hands around his neck. The carotid artery is actually buried quite deep.
Well, he could probably touch his fingers together, but, you know, anyway. Obviously, he beats Teal'c down.
But he doesn't actually kill Teal'c.
Well, obviously,
because... Maybe he thinks he's killed Teal'c.
Or he was just disabling him so he could go through the gate. But anyway, that brings us to the next part where he actually goes to the gate. And at the right in front of the gate, you see Teal'c standing there. You know, kind of, none shall pass. You know, kind of a...
Yes. I think we did a brief aside into Quest for the Holy Grail there.
Yeah.
Last time we recorded.
Of course. Why do you think I did it again?
Yes, Teal'c is the Black Knight. And please, for the love of God, I'm not being racist, okay? Honestly.
No, the character was called the Black Knight.
Yes, the character was called the Black Knight. That is not a please, for the love of God, don't report us to the MPAA.
What would they do?
I don't know. Probably send a cease and desist letter to the website. So, we don't know what Kyle Shack means. But at a guess, it's probably get the effing hell out of the way.
Probably.
What he actually says is, you cannot pass.
Okay, whatever. What do you do, Google it?
What? No, what I'm just guessing. I'm guessing on context.
Well, there you go. But anyway. And obviously
and
they fight.
And we see Teal'c pushing the back of his head into the event horizon. And O'Neill's like, shut it down now.
And the back of Kowalski's head gets chopped off by the...
Mm-hmm.
Well, I wouldn't say chopped off, but it's more like absorbed. There you go. And, part of the ghoul drops out and shrivels up. And shortly after that, bursts into a little bit of flame there for a second.
And then we see Daniel back, so something of the host must survive.
Uh-huh. And at the very end, obviously Kennedy and Hammond are in the office.
Kennedy's doing the gloat look, I have a personal call from the president thing, and that's Hammond and Kennedy sort of looking suitably sick.
And at the very end, Teal'c, dressed like an SG-1, but holding his staff weapon, joins SG-1 and...
It's a seminal sort of commencement of the series scene. So really, Children of the Gods and Enemy Within are really just establishment. Our first proper episode with an attacked SG team is Emancipation.
And we're going to be recording
that
note, this later. Of course, it's an episode I don't like.
On that
anyway.
Note, we shall... No, we can discuss Emancipation when we're discussing Emancipation.
We're going
that
to.
Note, on that note, folks, we will sign off. Since Emancipation is the next episode, you're going to have to wait for episode 3 from us. But I thought it was a nice segue.
And what we're planning on doing is trying to edit both of these and maybe release them a day or so between, just to get caught up.
Gaycast at phasecast.com. Don't forget our competition. If you send us a theme, whichever theme is picked, we'll get a copy of Stargate Continuum.
And there's only one person that is signed or that
entered.
Is sent it. So if you send in anything, you have a pretty good chance of winning because,
Currently, Matt from Michigan's odds are 100%.
Yeah, and it's actually pretty good. So make the best thing you can. Anyway, as he said, he already dropped the email.
Yep.
Go ahead.
Scott has the phone number.
That's actually kind of what I was trying to say, too.
Yep.
Anyway, I was going to say, Ellen dropped in the email, so the phone number is 206-426-6882.
That's 206-426-6882. I'll see if I can come up with a minor prize for anyone that can come up with something vaguely gate-related that those numbers form a word for.
What about... okay, yeah. I was going to say, we should find someone to make a a bumper for us, too.
I'm sure we can record a bumper. We can dig out some of our podcast friends. I'll rummage through my 52-person Skype list.
I have 6 people on Skype. Anyway.
I tend to add it. Anyway, that would be it for this episode. Give us feedback by all means, although it's unlikely you'll get the feedback before the next episode because we're probably going to be recording it now.
Well, we are going to record it now, but if you send anything before we release it, we could possibly get together and do a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
You never know. Anyway, see you in a couple days, people.
Okay, be well.
Right.
Stopped recording conversation.